Radio Doomsday Live. I'm your host, Mike Luckman. This program is on every Thursday night on DBS radio station number 2. And the toll-free number, if you'd like to call up and have any questions for myself or my guest, the number is 1-888-429-5471. That's 1-888-429-5471. I've got a lot on my plate for tonight. I'd like to start off, before I introduce my guest, and I've got a great guest for tonight's program, Robert Stanley, who is an esteemed researcher and investigator of UFOs over Washington, D.C., and we're going to get back, we're going to get to Robert in just a few minutes, but first, in some of the news items that have been going on, amazing what's been going on the last couple of days. Robbie Williams is a pop star. You may or may not know his name, but you will soon. Robbie Williams is the number one pop star in England right now and has been for many years. And in Europe, you mention his name and people go absolutely crazy for him. He has been involved with UFO activity. He's had his own close encounters, including an extraordinary one that happened in his in a recording studio when he was doing a song called Arizona, which is about UFO contact, and he had this very interesting object come inside the room in the recording studio that he described as almost as a like a strip of light that just darted in and around the room and then eventually I guess went out the window or the door. Robbie has had a number of UFO sightings, and also I broke the story about his camping out in Trout Lake in the state of Washington. Trout Lake is where there's an enormous amount of UFO activity all the time. It's run by a guy, there's a ranch out there run by James Gillian. James will tell you, and also if you can go to their website for the ranch, you'll see that there's activity there on a regular basis. If there was any place that qualifies as a place where extraterrestrials might land, short of them landing here in New York in Times Square, it would be in Trout Lake, Washington. It's almost like a scene right out of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Now, the reason that Robbie is in the news right now, very interesting. Robbie Williams apparently is in the process of purchasing an entire island off of the California coast, about 25 miles off of Los Angeles. And Robbie plans to live there with his wife and to use it to observe UFOs, both UFOs in the sky and also underwater submerged objects, which are referred to as USOs, underwater submerged objects. He first became interested in this a few years ago when he actually went jet skiing with some of his friends looking for underwater UFOs. And now he's planning on using it as a base. Now, what's also a sideline to all of this is that he's recently gone into the fashion business. And he wants to get away from the whole UFO thing because he thinks, from an image standpoint, I guess the people around him feel, his management company, et cetera, think that was a public relations disaster because he got so much attention. He was becoming known as the flying saucer pop star rather than just a pop star. So now he wants to go into fashion. But it turns out that what he really wants is to look for UFOs. And he's purchasing this island for about $750,000. It hasn't gone through yet, but he expects to purchase it. And information that I have, and it correlates with some statements that Robbie has made earlier, is that Robbie actually wants to start a religion, a UFO-based religion similar to Scientology. Let's hope not too similar to Scientology, because they're really off the wall. But that's what's going on with Robbie Williams. I'm sure you'll be hearing more about him almost on a daily basis, and he's going to become extremely well-known here in the United States. I mean, I could picture news helicopters going out there trying to get the scoop on what's going down with Robbie Williams and extraterrestrial UFOs. There's some very disturbing news out of Lake Erie. Lake Erie is a very large body of water, and it touches Canada. And where it does touch Canada, there are tens of thousands, this just within the last day or two, tens of thousands of dead birds, as well as quite a number of dead pelicans, and they don't know what caused this. Now, I've been saying since I began this program, Radio Doomsday Live, that this is not business as usual. Birds falling out of the sky by the thousands, and fish washing up on shore. There have been penguins, not in Lake Erie, but elsewhere. Penguins, dolphins. I mean, something's causing this. It's just not a natural occurrence. And my concern is, of course, that kind of could start to affect us in a direct way. Now, there's something also very peculiar that's happening. The Center for Disease Control had put out some statement, maybe within the last six or 8 months, talking about zombies. And they seem to be kind of serious about it, or if they were tongue-in-cheek, they didn't make that known. I mean, they were talking about the possibility of zombie outbreaks, although they admit that there's no such thing as a zombie. But nonetheless, I mean, we've already had instances, and we're living, ladies and gentlemen, very strange times. We've had instances of cannibalism, and there's always been cannibalism, but there have been a number of incidents of cannibalism that have occurred in recent time down in Florida and elsewhere. But what's really crazy is that the Department of Homeland Security has just put out a statement warning or asking people to be prepared for a zombie attack or attacks. This is completely bizarre. This is completely off the wall. The Department of Homeland Security telling us that we should be concerned about zombies? There's no such thing as zombies, except in the movies. But my concern is that what they're really up to is that they're desensitizing the public. When and if the economy falls way down, and there are more food riots, and there are more riots over food and water and things of that nature, as well as things, for example, radioactivity. I mean, radiation from Fukushima in Japan is working its way to California right now as we speak, and the United States government wouldn't allow Kobe beef, which is the most expensive beef from Japan. This is where they take the cows and they massage the cows all 24 hours a day, I guess, before they slaughter the cows. They're not allowing Kobe beef into the United States because they're concerned about, I guess, low levels of radiation at this point, but still, any radiation is too much, I think. Also, I wanted to comment about the ongoing solar activity, solar superstorms, things of that nature. There are just some astounding video on the official NASA.gov website. On an ongoing basis, this has been going on for months now, of all kinds of solar flares and things acting up on the sun. And the evidence of this, the concern is really great, because there are these chemtrails. Chemtrail spraying is going on a wholesale basis, ladies and gentlemen, in the United States and other parts of the world as we speak. It's a secret program. I've actually seen some of these planes. They're unmarked white planes. It has to be a multi-billion-dollar program to keep planes up in the air that long. They usually make these giant X's in the sky for whatever reason, I guess to track their location. And they fall. I mean, I have seen New York City skyline, sky in New York, marked up almost like chalk on a blackboard. It's obvious that this has something to do with the sun. The problem is that people who have been researching this, I'm going to have a guest on in a few weeks to address this subject. They have to. There's concern about impact on the public, health impact on the public. There's serious concern having to do with that. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's all going on at the same time. I also would like to say a few words, and I'm going to be expanding on this in the shows to come, having to do with spirituality and this transformation that's going to happen starting on December 21st, 2012, the last date of the Mayan calendar, which some people incorrectly, and Reuters News Agency claims that it's 10% of the population, according to their poll, believe that that incorrectly is this is going to be the end of the world. Well, it's definitely not going to be the end of the world. Nothing physical of a physical nature is likely to happen on that date at all. However, I do believe, I've said many times, we're definitely living in the end times, in my opinion. And we have to prepare ourselves in every way. Now, one of the things that's going to be taking place is a vast and unexpected, well, the Mayans will tell you that they expected, spiritual transformation. And one of the things that's going to happen, this is quite, quite interesting, is that, that may happen, is that we're going to start to develop a sixth sense. And this may come in very handy for communication with extraterrestrials. But in addition, the pineal gland, which has been called the third eye, is located, is sort of a dormant gland that is active at the time of birth and at the time of death. And the pineal gland may become active, in which case that would certainly open up the portal for contact with extraterrestrials and for our sixth sense. There'll be other things happening spiritually too, and I'm going to talk about them in coming weeks. But I don't want to waste another minute. I want to get to my guest, esteemed researcher and author of a book, actually two books, one called Close Encounters, on Capitol Hill, and the second book is called Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. I'd like to welcome you, Robert Stanley, to the show.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Good. Yeah. I'm really happy to have you. We spoke quite a number of years ago, and I'm really intrigued because actually at one time I had a book, I had several years ago a book, Simon & Schuster put out a book called Alien Rock, The Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Encounters,
right.
Which had to do, of course, with major rock stars and their UFO encounters from Elvis to the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And the more I dug, the more I found. But originally, before that, with Simon & Schuster, the very same publisher, I had a book under contract that goes all the way back to the time when Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the movie, was coming out. And it was going to be a visual book, about 50% pictures, having to do with UFOs. So when I saw your book, And by the way, you can go to Robert's website, Unicus, U-N-I-C-U-S magazine.com, to see some of these pictures. I was just amazed, and I understand that there's something like, that you clock something like 240 instances of UFOs that have been seen and or photographed over the nation's capital, perhaps since about the 50s or so.
No, actually, it's that's in the first book. I only have 240, over 200 reports, actually. So the second book, I have over 900 reports, and they start in 1850, and they go right up to the present day.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you sent President Obama a letter in which you drew his attention to these things. Did you get any response?
No, that wasn't directly sent to the White House. That was just an open letter to illustrate to people what was going on, mainly because John Podesta was, I knew he was part of the transition team, and my journalism partner in Washington, my journalism partner in Washington, D.C., has had conversations with John Podesta, who is famous. When he was under Clinton, he actually went to the National Press Club in 2002, the same year that they were photographed landing at the Capitol by my partner, Mr. Allen, formerly with ABC News. John Podesta went to the National Press Club and said, we should have disclosure. It's time, you know. And unfortunately, when we contacted him in 2006, and we actually had the photographs to prove that they had already landed at the Capitol, John Podesta and his people said, no way, we don't want to be involved. We could actually cause a panic with this kind of information. So he backed out. That's really what I was doing, was just saying, look, if he's part of the transition team, he's probably advising Obama, don't even touch us with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, you know, and Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, as I've noted on this show before, we were shown the goods by the late Lawrence Rockefeller, New York City billionaire philanthropist, led the secret report, or one secret report, which he was briefing world leaders. And they were staying at his ranch, the J.Y. Ranch in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. They were there for 2 weeks, so Rockefeller had a captive audience, particularly because he planned to make a donation to President Clinton's reelection campaign.
Right.
And Bill said that he couldn't, you know, Bill said that it was a, you know, sticky situation. He didn't want to get involved with it. And Hillary told Rockefeller, don't even bring this up again.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen the pictures of that where she's walking around holding a book and they're talking and at the ranch. And yeah, I know this is a difficult subject for anybody to deal with, but especially if you're in the government, I don't think that they're, even if, like Carter said, he wanted to disclose this information, obviously he was prevented from doing so.
Yeah, Jimmy Carter wanted to get the information out, and he obviously now, if he's asked about his own sighting in Georgia when he was governor, he backs off. He'll say, well, it could have been anything. I mean, so obviously they got to him, or they advised him that this wasn't a smart move. Have you made any attempts through the years to be in contact with anybody else in Washington and in high places that might be able to shed light on this?
Well, yes. I mean, I made an offer to John Podesta's public relations firm. I said, if you can get anybody to come on the record, whether it's anonymously or not, I would certainly like to hear from them regarding the matter of, you know, hundreds of UFO visitations going on, violations of prohibited airspace on a regular basis. I think somebody should have at least address this. And I was told no way that anybody from any agency would do that, because they would be held accountable by the public for something that they can't control. So, you know, part of the initial investigation that I did, based on the photographs of these objects swarming over and even landing on the Capitol on July 16, 2002, in the middle of the night, I contacted the Capitol Police, because I thought, well, you know, this is going to make them look bad. if I go forward with this story, I want to at least first give them an opportunity to make a comment.
Yes.
And because, well, I went in through the front door through the public relations officer, and the guy that answered the phone was completely confused by my line of questioning, and so he said he would have to consult with his superiors and get back to me. And they did, but they were very evasive, and they left a lot of wiggle room in there, which I cover in the first book. It wasn't a big conversation, really. It was just them acknowledging that, yeah, we do patrol the grounds 24/7. We have security cameras that are on all the time. And specifically, I wanted to know, do members of the House and the Senate, can they be in that building any time of the day or night? And the answer was, yeah, they can be there. They can work as late as they want. Because obviously I was a little concerned that there's lights on in the building and there's something landed on the roof. I'm just like, who knows what's going on there? So, but eventually, Mike, what happened was a few years into my investigation, I was contacted by, through back channels, through the Senate Sergeant at Arms, and which is a very influential division of the Capitol Police. They handle all the communications and stuff. They really do. They run the place on the inside. Anyway, somebody was very careful in other words, they maintain plausible deniability. And here's what happened. A guy who's married to one of the Capitol Police officers at the Senate Sergeant at Arms used his wife's BlackBerry to communicate with me instances that not only he had witnessed personally, but also in the presence of other, let me be more specific. This guy actually worked at the Capitol as a tour guide.
Right.
He married one of the U.S. Capitol Police officers, a female. But he was also, you can imagine, working there, he got to be friends with quite a few of the Capitol Police officers. So he was passing on to me, in an unofficial capacity, he was passing on to me at least two reports that confirmed that the U.S. Capitol Police were actually witnessing these things and recording them in their logs. And these things were, interestingly enough, they were exactly what was photographed on July 16, 2002. And the reason this comes up is because the person who took the photographs July 16, 2002, named Wilbur Allen, formerly with ABC News, he actually had he was compelled to go there after the event and take copies of the photographs to the Capitol Police and say, look, some kind of violation has occurred here.
Yeah.
You guys should have, because he had the photographs, he said, I want you to have a copy of this. And
right.
He claimed to me that the detective division actually did take a report from him, and they took the photographs and thanked him for it, and they kept in touch with him, allegedly. They had told him that they actually had many accounts on their logs of officers on patrol seeing these objects. But they couldn't just release this information to me, even if it had been censored. They couldn't just release it, right? And they also couldn't just, without approval or authorization, they couldn't just comment on it. Because there's another agency that they answer to. Go ahead.
Yeah, theoretically, there is a concern about national security, and that's restricted airspace over the Capitol and over the White House.
No, that's prohibited, Mike. There's a difference. The prohibited airspace starts at the Washington Monument, and it goes out in a circle from there. Outside of the prohibited airspace is restricted. There's a difference. You can fly through restricted airspace and not get shot down or fined. They won't let you do it often, but it happens. If you fly into prohibited airspace, you're in big trouble. As a human, you can't go to the Capitol and even fly a kite. They'll be all over you. The Capitol Police or whoever is guarding the area. Now think about this too. This happened after 9/11.
You went out some of this information for the first time, Robert. I know that you had. Tell us about the unmarked helicopters, military helicopters that apparently buzz your home in Washington D.C. You have pictures of that on your website?
No. Yes, I do. Actually, when you click on books, when you go to unicusmagazine.com, click on books. There's also links there. the to my free DC UFO image archive. Okay, so you've got still pictures, videos, and actually some historical movies that were confiscated and classified back in 1952 by the government. They've been leaked. They've been leaked by various media at various times, but it's all there. It really helps tell the story, okay? It puts it into a bigger context. But anyway, the picture I have of the black helicopter was over my home when I was living in Los Angeles. That happened when I first broke the story in July of 2005, some three years after the event had occurred.
And why do you think? What were the first thoughts that entered your mind when that happened?
I hadn't put the two together because I was so shocked. I mean, I was sitting in my office working, and fortunately my family was not home at the time, but they were doing these really tight circles over very low over the house, shaking the entire house. So I went outside to see what was going on, and here is this black helicopter hovering over my car, maybe 100, 200 feet above it. I could have hit it with a baseball, honestly. That was that low. And I'm looking at these guys going, what in the heck are you doing? It was totally black, and the windows were totally black. And I mean, fortunately, I had the presence of mind to run into the house and grab a regular point-and-shoot camera. I got a picture of them before they left just to prove that I'm not making it up. But then it dawned on me, wait a minute, you know, this is like a few days after I had released the article. The first article I wrote was fairly innocent, and it included these pictures. I mean, it was all about breaking the story internationally, not only in print, but also on the internet, that, hey, UFOs landed on the Capitol building in July 16th a few years ago, and here's the photographs to prove it. I think the reason I got visited is because I had, like I said, I'd already been calling over to the Capitol building, speaking to the Capitol Police, and they wanted to know who I was, why I was asking these questions, where I was going to publish this information, and when. So it perfectly coincided. That visit perfectly coincided with the release of the first article and the photographs.
Yeah. Do you? Did you take this as a warning?
Yeah. Well, it was certainly a form of intimidation. I mean, it's a little vague as to, you know, whether they try to warn me, because it obviously didn't work. If that was what their intentions were, I obviously didn't get that memo that I was supposed to stop. I mean, because look, I feel that if I was doing anything illegal, I should be charged for it. Or if I really was doing something illegal, I guarantee you they would have charged me. Right? I wasn't doing anything illegal. It's just highly inconvenient that I was publicizing something they want to keep quiet.
Yeah. Have you had any kind of have your phone been tapped to your knowledge, or have you had any other incidents that have happened through the years since publishing both of these books?
Well, sure. I mean, the first one obviously was the single black military helicopter, but then, and that was July 2005. When I released the first book, which honestly I didn't even know I was going to write a book. I didn't. I just wrote an article, figured that'd be the end of it. But then I started really digging into the data, and I found, because I knew about 1952, and I thought, well, hey, that's interesting, a 50-year gap. And I started looking at 1952, and then I found there was actually that they'd showed up dozens of times in 1952, but it was never really reported. And I thought, that's weird. So I started digging a little deeper and deeper. Pretty soon I had over 100 reports pertaining to Washington, D.C. And I thought, this is crazy. How come I never heard about this before? Why isn't anybody talking about it? So ultimately that's what led to the publication, or the first book came out in the fall of 2006. I went on national radio, and right after the show, my website was hacked, and the pictures of the UFOs were taken off. And
oh, really?
The people, that's, you know, anybody can hack a website. The funny thing was, I mean, really strange, was when I called the tech support, the guys there said, we cannot get into the server. Now, this is their server. They couldn't even, whoever hacked it, not only did it such a way that they took down the pictures, they locked it up so that the people that owned the server couldn't even get into the files to correct it.
I see.
Or unlock it for me. I couldn't get it. They couldn't get in. I ended up having to move to a different to server. You know, which
well,
who do you think
these extraterrestrials are?
Wow, that's an open-ended question. I really don't know. Some of them clearly are human. Some of them are
humanoid.
No, some of them are completely human.
Completely human,
according to the NATO study that was done in the early 60s, according to Command Sergeant Major Robert Dean, who I interviewed for,
yes,
you know, extensively in my first book, he said that that's what the NATO study actually came to the awareness of. There was four different groups. One of them was human. That was the one they were most concerned about. They didn't appear to be overtly hostile, but the fact is they could infiltrate if they chose to do so. They could be anywhere. So then there was another group that was a tall humanoid, sort of like a larger version of the Greys. And then there was the Greys, obviously, which are apparently clones. And then there's these reptilian humanoids. So that apparently our government, or NATO, has known about this since the 60s. I mean, really extensively studied the problem as a potential threat.
You are you sourcing on this? Any other? I know Robert Dean, but does that all come from Robert Dean, or have you had some other information concerning NATO or the government that supports the same idea?
Yeah, well, in my second book, I have over 900 reports of UFO activity and or extraterrestrials being sighted in Washington D.C. Humans,
mm-hmm.
humans. Okay. And over a period of time, it seemed like the 50s and the 70s, there was a lot of stuff going on there, specifically in Washington, D.C. and the Pentagon. How long they've been here interacting with this covertly, God only knows. But, yeah, there's many different sources that corroborate what Bob Dean has said, and that's all in my second book, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. The conclusion is 100 pages long, and Man, I'm going to have to live with this for the rest of my life. I stand behind the conclusion. I know it's highly controversial, but there are definitely malevolent extraterrestrials that are among us as well, and they're extremely attracted to Washington, D.C., because I think they're, you know, that's their whole reason for going there. They're absolutely manipulating the affairs of mankind.
What about the Anunnaki, or the beings that supposedly come from Planet X that Zechariah Sitchin spoke about in his many books. Do you believe that they're out there, and you think they're on their way back?
Mike, they never left. They never left.
They never left. Where do you think they're hiding? Or are they hiding?
Well, look, if they're human, they don't have to hide.
Right.
You know? They can live among us. And, the other thing is, look, we know that there's underground bases that are modern. We also know that there's ancient tunnel systems that lead to underground cities that, you know, are basically off limits to humans. They're inside mountains.
Right.
They're underground. They're underwater. You know, I mean, these bases are ancient. And these people obviously have had a leg up on us for a long time, whoever they are, wherever they're from. But, you know, Sitchin never said they left.
Right.
He just said that the planet a lot of people assume that they left,
mm-hmm.
and I guarantee you they didn't. Just look at the historical record.
Okay.
They haven't left. They've always been here.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Radio Doomsday Live. I'm your host, Mike Luckman. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 1-888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. My guest is Robert Stanley, an investigator and researcher, and author of two books having to do with UFOs over the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Robert, what got you interested? What got you started on this subject?
You mean in Washington, D.C.? Or just in
general? Well, no, just in general, the UFO subject. How did you, what was your first encounter? Have you had any sightings?
Oh, yeah. Yes,
so?
I've had multiple. Yeah, I've had a lot of close encounters, Mike, and because I grew up in Malibu. And it's interesting, really, you know, piqued my interest when you said Robbie Williams is going to buy that, or trying to buy that island out there. Yeah, because it's a hotbed of activity. It's, you know, most people don't think of Malibu particularly as anything but a place for, you know, lifestyles of rich and famous, but there's been, there, especially when I was growing up there, there was a lot of UFO activity, and in fact, people did see them going in and out of the water. So, you know, that's where I grew up. I had multiple close encounters there, and I do have some pictures of that to, you know, some kind of evidence that they were there. I've even had a close encounter. The most recent one that I photographed was here where I'm living in Rhode Island right now with my family. It was February 2009. And that was not just an isolated event, by the way. I did a show like this, and afterwards, I was talking about Washington, D.C. Afterwards, I was quite frustrated because at the time, I didn't feel like I wasn't really getting much traction on this story, which I think is extremely important for everybody. But anyway, I went outside after the show, and it was late, and I looked up at the stars, and I was basically yelling at them, whoever's up there. I'm like, because I know from past experiences they can hear what you think. We call it telepathy or whatever, but I just was saying, are you guys nuts? You expect me personally to take on Washington, D.C.? I mean, are you crazy? I mean, come on. And I was just venting, really. I wasn't expecting anything. I said, you know, I mean, God, how about some help? At the very least, could you help me? And, you know, the 12 hours later, okay, I went back out into the yard, let the dog out, and I'm just standing there. And lo and behold, there was a golden sphere out there not far off in the distance. And at first I thought it was Venus or something like that, a daytime star. But then I noticed it was moving towards me, and I was like, wow, that really got my interest. So I ran into the house, grabbed a camera, came back out, and at that point it had stopped over the backyard. Now, it was probably up, I don't know, a couple thousand feet or so. I mean, I'm not really great at gauging that, but it was stopped over the back of the backyard. And so I took four pictures of it in succession, and then I lowered my camera to check my settings. I looked back up, it was gone. It was just gone, okay? But then I remembered, oh, wait a minute. Last night I was yelling at them and asking them, why aren't you helping me? They obviously heard what I said or how they knew how I was feeling, and that was their response. It's like, hey, we heard you, and if you really needed us, we got your back. We can be over your house in no time. So it's just that
there's a reason, Robert. I mean, you're involved as deep as you can get in a sense with UFOs over the nation's capital. Do you think it's a reason that it's you, not somebody else doing this?
Yeah, Mike, that's a good question because I've asked myself that many times. I don't know why it's me, but I do know this, that nobody else wants to touch this story. Nobody. And if I didn't finish the job, and I don't think I'm quite done yet, I think it's still going to take a few more years of promoting this information or reporting the information before, you know, that we'll reach a tipping point where the public goes, whoa, hey, wait a minute, what, this isn't right. But anyway, yeah, I've tried to walk away from this a couple of times, and I actually felt really guilty that if I didn't do it and nobody else did it, that I would feel like an idiot, you know, or at the very least, you know, I would feel guilty for not completing the mission, right? So I don't know why it fell on my shoulders. I mean, this isn't rocket science, really. But I do have a skill. I learned at Honda Research and Development when I was working there for 8 years. When I was doing reports in a futurist department, I actually learned how to do timelines really well. And from timelines, you can actually discern patterns, signals in the noise. And so I've actually got good at that, and I was able to apply that skill to the research as it unfolded. And look, I was more surprised than anybody as I kept finding these reports, one after the other after the other. And you do see a similarity. There's many similarities in the way that the people report these things. I mean, come on, over the decades, that many decades, you got so many different people reporting the same thing happening in the same location, it's got to be real. But besides that, we got the photographs, we got radar returns, we know the military was there. In fact, in July 16, 2002, 10 days later, NORAD scrambled jets to chase them out of the area because they just keep coming back, okay?
Yeah.
And people were seeing them. People were seeing them. They sure as heck didn't want them coming back to the Capitol, you know, so they chased them out of the area. They scrambled them.
Mayan elders that I know have indicated to me that they expect that their space gods will be returning sometime in the relative near future. And what was interesting, too, is that when they did this program here in New York about a year and a half ago called The Legend of the 13 Crystal Skulls, which I was involved with, they predicted that that there would be UFO activity. And sure enough, about a week later, there were UFOs seen everywhere in New York City. And they tried to explain it all, explain it as balloons and stuff. And the balloons might have been involved as well. But meanwhile, they shut down all three of the main airports in the New York area for a period of maybe 6 hours. That wasn't for balloons.
I know. I remember that, Mike. I actually reported that. I was working as the extraterrestrial correspondent for America's Morning News last year. That's what I did. Every Friday morning, I got up early and I would give my report. So, yeah, we covered that last year. America's Morning News, by the way, is out of Washington, D.C. It's a nationally syndicated radio news program, hard news, but they had me on there once a week giving my reports, partially for comic relief.
Correspondent, that's a new one.
For mainstream news,
today, where the network, the television networks, have extraterrestrial correspondents.
You know, it could, anything's possible, Mike. I really don't know what's going to happen, but look, that was their idea. They read my first book, and at that news organization, and they actually offered me that position.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, whatever, you know, it's a different demographic, I'll go for it. But look, since you brought up the Maya, the photographer, Mr. Allen, who was actually there July 16th, taking those pictures, he wasn't there to take pictures of the UFO, okay? Formerly with ABC News, he was there on a freelance assignment. He was taking pictures for an album cover at the Capitol building between 12 and 1 at that night. And what happened, I noticed there's nobody around at that hour, at least not in the pictures, and I said, did you see anybody that night, anybody at all? And he says, you know, the only people I saw was a group of people. They look like Maya. They were dressed up like Mayans. And he said it was so out of place, he almost, like, dismissed it as a stunt, you know, or something. But there wasn't like a movie shooting there or anything like that. He said, these people look like so out of place, and yet they were human. But he said that was something that was like something out of the Twilight Zone. But again, he was getting paid big money to shoot this cover for an album. And yet all these UFOs showed up, and there was this small group of men and women dressed in Mayan garb. So I don't know, Mike. Maybe they were Mayans that showed up, or ancient Mayan gods that showed up that night. I don't know.
That's wild. That's one of the wildest.
It is weird. The whole thing's nuts, man. I'm telling you, I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried. My imagination is not that good.
Have you had any kind of missing time experiences? Do you think that that you're in a sense, a contactee in any way, or
I think it goes a little deeper than that, Mike. I think I'm actually related to some of these human extraterrestrials or extra dimensional beings. That's my take on it. I know that sounds really crazy, but I mean, look, I'm born and raised here in America. I live a fairly normal life, but that's the only explanation I can give you for the number of encounters that I've had and the type of encounters I've had with various human beings that are obviously not from here. That's my take on it, is that somehow, I mean, we could, for all I know, we're all related to them, but I have a relationship with them, like I said. When they showed up here February of 2009, that wasn't the first time that they have heard my thoughts. One of the first times, that just utterly profound, okay, real quick, when I was in Malibu, living in Malibu, and I was up in the mountains one night, I was coming down from the mountains, and I felt like somebody was watching me, okay, but it's totally pitch black up there. I never, you know, it wasn't like cars were following me. I just felt it on the back, you know, like somebody's staring at you, you kind of feel it in the back of your neck kind of thing. It was so profound, and so at some point I'm riding along, and I look up at this one area of the dark space, region of the mountain, and I thought, you know, to myself, hey, I'm going to do an experiment to see if I'm imagining this or not. So I mentally said to projected. I was looking at his spot, right? And I said to him, hey, I know you're up there. Why don't you just show yourselves, because, you know, I'm not going to harm you. And as soon as I had that thought, Mike, they turned the light on the UFO. They were pacing. They were actually following me. And I swear to God, I almost wrecked my bike because I was in a state of shock. I was in a state of shock, not because I was seeing a UFO again. And no, this time, this had crossed all boundaries because, suddenly I'm faced with the reality, like, oh, my God, not only did they hear me, they really are following me around. This is nuts. I mean, wow, what do you do with something like that?
When do you think that there will be actually open contact with the human race?
Well, it's certainly not going to, the government's not going to do it. And I think that part of the big problem here is that the negatives, the malevolent ones, are actually running the show here. And they don't want us to have any kind of open dialogue with the good guys because everything's going to come spilling out. So it's a situation I'm not sure. It's a standoff, I should say. And I'm not sure what's going to give or what's going to cause this thing to, you know, a tipping point will be reached. I mean, look, they obviously can land on the Capitol building. If they wanted to hang out and have a press conference, they could have done it by now, really. But I'm not sure what the good guys are waiting for. But I certainly know the bad guys, like I said. I mean, look, you don't go into hostile territory hundreds of times, you know, unless you have an agenda. Because they're here covertly, whoever they are, they're here covertly. I think the good guys are here covertly too, and they're trying to counteract what some of the bad guys have been doing to us for quite some time. So it's a mess, honestly.
Yeah. Have you tried to sell these pictures or interest TV networks in doing a story on this?
Absolutely. Well, look, my partner, Mr. Allen, worked for ABC News for 14 years prior to taking those pictures. Who do you think he took them to first? You know, besides the Capitol Police. I mean, he took it to ABC News, and they turned him down flat. So did NBC and CBS and National Geographic.
They don't give a reason.
They don't need to give a reason, Mike. They just ignore it. They ignore it. Okay, I think they're under orders to do so. Otherwise, the FCC will pull their license.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, I can't prove it, but I swear to God, I believe that with all my heart because I know how. Look, I started this investigation not knowing a damn thing about Washington, D.C., other than it's the Capitol. 7 years later, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about how Washington, D.C. operates above board and below board. I mean, there's a lot of covert stuff that goes on there, as you can imagine. But like I say, you know, there is a satanic element that involved in Washington, D.C. that goes way back. It's part of the origins of the city. It's directly tied to the Vatican. Not saying the Vatican's satanic in nature, but there are entities there allegedly that are demonic in the Vatican as well as the Capitol building. So it's a problem. It's a real problem that we all are being affected by, and yet most of us are utterly ignorant of these facts.
Yeah, it's a lot to digest.
Yeah, look, it's intimidating. And when this thing first broke, I understood people's skepticism. But at this point, I've given so much evidence that I don't think, and nobody's challenging me on this, by the way. I would like it. If somebody could prove me wrong, I'll be the first to apologize. But so far, nobody's even attempted to do it. I think because they don't want to draw further attention to it or turn me into a martyr. So, besides, look, it's not about me. It's about the investigation. It's about the factual evidence that I have dug up, and then put into a timeline, a context, analyzed it, come to some conclusion, reported it, and if somebody can do better, please, show me the way, because I guarantee you there is a problem in Washington, D.C. And I mean, these things are seen all over the planet, but the fact that they can they just pop in and out of prohibited airspace anytime they feel like it, it should be a matter of concern. And it is. People are concerned, but they don't know who to turn to.
This whole thing about the national security implications of it is very important. And that's one of the reasons why it really upset me to learn that that the Clintons were not, you know, that they had been briefed, they had been shown. I have a copy of the report, which includes, you know, formerly top secret documents, and includes UFOs making incursions at nuclear weapons storage areas in various parts of the United States, and also experiences having to do with passenger airplanes coming into contact with UFOs. So there are real, you know, security implications involved here. And here's presently the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, and she says nothing about it, of course. And
right.
Bill Clinton just, you know, bypassed it. And what's ironic is that Bill Clinton was extremely interested in Roswell. When he first got into office,
right.
he told Webster Hubble, you know, his close golfing buddy, his friend, that he wanted him to look into two things: one, who killed John F. Kennedy, when
mm-hmm.
Hubble got to the Justice Department, because for a time he was under Janet Reno, who was appointed an assistant to Janet Reno in the Justice
right.
Department, and the second thing was, what's the truth about UFOs and Roswell?
Right, at Roswell, yeah. Well, it didn't start there, obviously. That was just another event among many, many, many that have happened over the course of the entire history of this planet and our species. We've never been alone,
right.
ever. Okay, but why they broke contact? I think the good guys, in the past our ancestors called them gods, demons, angels, whatever. Now we call them something else, but it's still there, okay? But there was a time in the past where we actually had some sort of community, or at least some humans actually did have direct communications with the gods. And they left. At some point, they left us here pretty much to our own devices. However, we still weren't alone. And I only recently came across that. It's on my blog right now, a prophecy from Hermes. He definitely was... He knew something, Mike. He knew something. As a messenger of the gods, he knew there was a time coming, and it's already here now.
Okay.
But he said the gods would leave Earth, and we would be left with evil angels who would drive us mad.
Evil angels who drive us mad.
Yeah.
We're not mad enough, huh?
No. Yeah, obviously, look, human beings are not perfect, okay? And I know we're responsible for our own actions, but we live under duress. I'm sorry to say this, but this is just the way it is. I have to be blunt about this. There's no other way to say this. We are under the influence, whether we know it or not, we are under the influence of malevolent extraterrestrial entities. Some of them are extra-dimensional. I think ultimately we're all extra-dimensional in the sense that our soul is not a physical thing.
Right.
Okay,
well,
but it is
before,
intelligent. Go ahead.
Before I let you go, I just wanted to get your view about this period of time that we're living in now, referred to in the Bible as the end times. Do you think we are in fact living this end time scenario?
Yeah, and again, I'll relate back to what Hermes said to one of his students in the Hermetica, all right? That was one of the bodies of writing that is attributed to Hermes. And he told them that a darkness had fallen on the earth. The gods had left. The evil angels were here among us, driving us crazy, causing all kinds of war and madness. So, and he said at some point there was going to be a divine intervention. And that there was going to be a multitude of earthquakes and other natural disasters and war, and ultimately the earth was going to have to be cleansed, and that there was going to be a restoration by a higher power, an intervention basically. So yeah, I do think that we're reaching that point of chaos that brought on by the dark side intentionally, you know. That we're due for an intervention by a higher power at some point, or emissaries of the Creator are going to intervene. The gods may return, and I think they're going to have to kick some butt. I don't know how else to say it, but these are some crazy times.
What do you think of the UFO coming down in Jerusalem near the Temple Mount that was photographed from?
Yeah,
three or four different directions from different cameras, so we know that it was really something that was happening.
Yeah.
Some people compared that to nothing less than the beginning of a second coming.
Well, then to me that's a bit of a stretch, because Christ was supposed to come riding out of the clouds on a white horse, not a UFO. But you know, maybe that's just an misinterpretation. If he does come, look, when he's allegedly, if you follow the script, when he comes back, though, he's going to kick some serious butt. He's not coming as a lamb, right? This time to be slaughtered.
Right.
Okay, he's coming in to kick the dark side's butt. And anybody who's on the side of the dark side, oh my God, I feel sorry for them. That would be a huge mistake for their souls. You know, so, you know, it's a very, very special time that we're living through. And my suggestion is that people get right with God. Whatever that means, you know, I know, look, everybody's got their own perception of this, but
yeah,
I do think, Mike, that we have souls, and that we can improve our souls by not having holding on to negative emotions. That literally stains our soul with darkness. And that, of course, that's what the dark side wants, is to keep us in bondage. So it's incumbent upon each one of us who want to be allied with God or the Creator, the light, whatever, I would say, you know, do whatever you can to minimize your exposure to negative emotions. And if you start feeling that way, transition over, start thinking about anything positive, something good, something that really makes you feel joyous or happy. Because right then you're changing the frequency of your soul from a lower vibration to a higher vibration. And you know, God, I understand it, is a creative force. It's an intelligent living energy that creates. So do something creative. Feel good. You know, have joy. Give other people joy. And that's the way, that is the path. That's one of the best ways that you can, you know, raise your vibration. The other thing I got to tell you is meditation is good. It's a key. You know, this the phrase, the kingdom of God is within. It's an incomplete statement. What should be said there is the portal to the kingdom of heaven is within. I know this from experience, okay? I was completely clueless when it happened, but I accidentally stepped out of this dimension altogether. I stepped into the light. I actually entered what some people call heaven back in September of 1985. I mean, I was in the light. I was there. So I know it exists, and there are people there, Mike. There are people there, and they're very loving, and the darkness just doesn't exist there at all. But how I got there was really unusual in that I was doing a meditation, and I was saying om. I raised my vibratory rate because I was actually being attacked by the dark side at that point. Right then, inadvertently, I stepped into a situation where a boy was possessed. I didn't know it at the time, but I was 25 at the time.
Robert, we're a lot of time.
Oh, okay.
But I want to thank you very much for being my guest on Radio Doomsday Live. Ladies and gentlemen, the show, Radio Doomsday Live, is on every Thursday night at 12 midnight Eastern Time and 9 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio Station Number 2. Thanks again, Robert. And
all right, thanks,
we'll have to have you back sometime soon to continue this.
Okay.
You really have some amazing experiences and insights. That's about it. Mike Luckman signing off. Until next time, if there is a next time.